Brendan Marks at Brendan R. Marks from The Athletic. Covers Carolina, covers Duke, covers the entire sport. He was at the Final Four, and he joins us on the Adam Gold Show. You caught me at a fired up moment, sir. How are you?
I sure did. You have enough fire for the both of us. I'm just coming out of my Final Four sleep coma, so go off. I trust you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the confidence. All right, so we got transfer portal news for both schools that you cover primarily over the last 24 hours. Let's start with Carolina, because I think there's offshoot conversations here. Seth Trimble entering the portal. I know James Okonkwo also entered, he didn't play really at all. If I don't remember you, you probably didn't play much. And there's players coming in that Carolina is recruiting, and he saw the writing on the wall. But Seth Trimble, explain this decision as best you can.
Yeah. Well, first of all, again, this is not the transfer decision of 4 or 5 seasons ago where it was so rare to have people hop in schools. Like, I try and say this every off season now. This is standard.
Right.
There are players who are going to leave both Duke and North Carolina and NC State every single offseason from here on out. That's just the way things are going to be. It's college basketball free agency, so don't try and take it too personally. As it pertains specifically to Seth, I think, you look at – first of all, this is a loss for North Carolina.
Yeah.
There's no way around that. In my opinion, he was probably the best perimeter defender on the team. Either he or Jalen Withers was the most athletic player on the team. We saw that with a couple of the highlight reel dunks he had. The big thing is Seth Trimble, I think at this point in his career, sees himself as a potential starting caliber point guard. And quite frankly, that was just never going to be the case next season in North Carolina, with Elliot Cadeau expected to be back. And then obviously the writing on the wall that potentially RJ Davis could also be back and use his COVID year of eligibility. So for Seth, it's about going somewhere where you can probably find more minutes. You can probably find a starting opportunity. For North Carolina, as we saw in their NCAA tournament loss to Alabama in the Sweet 16, his lack of ability to consistently stretch the floor was something that was going to inherently limit his playing time. So I wish Seth all the best, but it's one of those things where 5 seasons ago, he probably sticks around and develops and is a starter as a senior. But he doesn't have to wait that long given the portal these days.
Right. So it leads me to the next conversation is that do we anticipate now RJ Davis coming back and being the backcourt with Elliot Cadeau?
Well, so this is an interesting situation because obviously RJ Davis does have one more season and there's 3 options on the table here, right? Like option A is he comes back and will be handsomely compensated to do so.
Right.
B, he tries to test his professional luck. It does not appear based on, for example, The Athletic, our current draft expert, Sam Vecini, does not have RJ being selected in his most recent mock draft, does not have him among his top 60 picks.
Right.
Or top 60 players on his big board. But he could still try his professional luck. He would probably get a two-way, probably go to summer league, try and basically fill in a bench microwave scoring spot, which I think that possibility exists for him.
Sure.
Or option C, which is the one that nobody's really talking about right now, and I don't think is very likely, but we at least have to mention, which is that RJ Davis does all 3. He could declare for the NBA draft. He can also maintain his eligibility, and he can also elect to enter the transfer portal with the option to come back to North Carolina.
Uh-huh. Like Bronny James.
Yes.
No, seriously.
So all of those options are on the table. To me, the way that I see the situation, based on what I have been told after North Carolina season immediately ended, it sounded like the plan for RJ Davis was to enter the NBA draft while maintaining his eligibility. And I think that's what we're going to see with a couple of guys, both at North Carolina and Duke. They're going to go. They're going to see what the feedback is in May. They're going to go through draft workouts, go to the combine potentially, and then based on the feedback, make their decision. Ultimately, I believe that he's going to realize he's most valuable at North Carolina and return next season. But also, I will say, there's something to having been in school for 4 years and just being ready to move on to the next step of your life.
100%. And I know we're going to get to that also with one of the Duke players, Mark Mitchell. This is a case where he sees the incoming class, which is loaded with 3s, 4s, and 5s, and understands that playing time was not guaranteed, even though he would be a junior and upperclassman, and they can certainly use some experience. But these other guys were, like himself, he was a 5-star recruit as well, but these other guys might be 5-star NBA guys.
Right. And I think for Mark, the positional overlap is also like a skill overlap thing. That's the thing that really hurts him because, I mean, we just saw Connecticut win the national title. They didn't have a player under 6'4 in their starting lineup. Like, you can start a really big lineup, but for Duke next year, you already know that Cooper Flagg is going to be starting, probably the three or the four. You already know that Kamon Mulwalk, the 7'1" South Sudanese center, he's going to be starting. Both of those guys can shoot the ball. I would not classify either of them as a knockdown shooter.
Right.
And so if you have those two guys already basically built into your starting lineup, which they will be, they have the potential to be the number one and two picks in the draft next year. That then means if you have Mark Mitchell on the floor with them, suddenly you don't have as much shooting around those guys as I believe John Shire would like. And so it's not just a minutes thing. It's a skill overlap situation. Those two guys are going to be getting more of them. And listen, like if Mark had the ability to stretch the floor consistently, I don't know that he makes this decision. But the other thing to note to mention about Duke is the greater context here, which is that John Shire did not have enough scholarships for all of his players, and Mark is not going to be the only player to enter the transfer portal or go to the NBA. We obviously expect more of those decisions are going to come. But this is just the first in a sort of necessary roster management situation that John Shire is working with. So obviously you would rather not lose a five-star guy, but John Shire has so much talent. It's crazy to say, but he can certainly survive losing Mark Mitchell.
They've got like 6 5-star guys coming in. It's insane. And Isaiah Evans is going to, I mean, I can't imagine Isaiah Evans isn't going to start. So he'll be at the three. Flagg will be at the four. Mulwalk will be at the, I know I mispronounced his name, will be at the five. You still have Patrick Ngongba, who is a five-star power forward center. You've got shooters coming in. Before I even broach who might follow him out, I mean, we could probably be logical about it. What do we know about the guard situation? Jeremy Roach in the same position as RJ Davis. And how long until we find out the plans of Jared McCain?
Yeah. So to start with Jeremy Roach, like you mentioned, a similar situation to RJ Davis. I would actually say that RJ, I don't think this is a secret, probably has a better opportunity to go pro.
Yes.
His stock is never going to be higher than it is right now. Jeremy Roach, his value is going to be at its maximum in Durham next season. And so this with Jeremy Roach, I think the situation really is, do you want to come back to college? Do you want to do another year of school? Or are you at that point in your life that you're ready to move on? Like, think about how many players Jeremy Roach has now played with. If he comes back for another season, like, he will have played with more than a full starting lineup worth of NBA players who have come and gone through Durham. I think it is in Jeremy Roach's best interest to return. I think that if he comes back, that to me is the greatest question I have about Duke's roster next season. Who is the point guard? Who is the guy putting it all together? I think that Jeremy Roach solves that. He is the best solution to that question right now. And so I am operating as if Jeremy Roach is going to be back next year. Again, similarly with RJ Davis, to an even greater extent, I would not expect him to be drafted. I think he would have a more difficult time getting a two-way. He would have some summer league opportunities, obviously, but his value is going to be at its highest if he's back in the Duke Blue Devil uniform next year. The situation with Jared McCain, listen, the draft is there for the taking for him.
Yeah.
This is a down year in terms of professional prospects. The fact that he did what he did in the NCAA tournament, just in speaking with some agents and speaking with some scouts over the course of the past couple of weeks, people were really impressed with him. The knocks on Jared at this point, the biggest one is probably athleticism. The fact that he doesn't necessarily create his own shot, but the shooting is what it is. He's a plus rebounder for his size. He improved as a defender, although that's something he's going to have to keep getting better at. And I think, you know, a spot in the 20s in the NBA draft is certainly there within reach for him. So I would be surprised if he was back next season. This is going to be kind of a test case in my eyes of, like, what is Duke's NIL situation? You know, I think if you back up the Brinks truck, there's probably an opportunity for Jared McCain to come back. And, oh, my God, he would be a perfect fit on next year's roster.
Yep.
But can you make it worth his while to turn down a likely first-round spot? That's the biggest question.
Yeah, I mean, my guess is that, you know, I'm not comparing him to Tyler Hansborough, whose draft spot was basically the same every year. He could have gone after his freshman year, been the same, sophomore, junior, senior. So it was all the same. I think McCain, because of his size, is probably a, you know, some draft choice in the 20s. whether he goes this year or next year. Again, it does come down to NIL value and all that stuff. What does it mean for Tyrese Proctor?
He, I think, is probably the most interesting stay or go decision of any team in the Triangle, in my eyes at least, because there's no way to say that Tyrese Proctor did not have an underwhelming season.
Right.
I think by his standards, by probably Duke standards, certainly by, I think, outside expectation standards.
Yeah. Our standards, we talked about it before the season. We had, you and I had very high expectations for him, me higher probably.
I mean, we at The Athletic placed him on our second team preseason All-American list.
Yeah.
And that did not materialize, in some part because of injuries, which obviously you hate to see, but also because of inconsistency.
Yeah.
And the three-point shot did eventually come around. I thought that, you know, before Duke's loss to NC State, where he obviously had probably one of his worst games through two seasons, I thought he had been playing better. I thought that especially we saw the defense come on. But, you know, for him, I don't know that he would be drafted if he declared to go pro.
Right.
I will say he has a unique situation being from Australia. I have heard that there might be some interest potentially in a homecoming for him. You know, we saw this last offseason where Bobby Clintman from Wake Forest ended up going to go play in the NBL and is probably going to be a first-round pick as a result of that. Could that be a similar path for Tyrese Proctor? Potentially. But if he comes back, it's going to be an interesting situation. He, to me, is the guy who is kind of the ripple effect. What he does is going to impact what somebody like a Caleb Foster does. We'll have a role on what Jeremy Roach does. We'll have a role on, you know, potentially could any of these incoming Duke freshmen decide to reopen and evaluate new options. Proctor, to me, is the most fascinating one because I think it could go realistically one of a number of different ways. He's the guy I have the least certainty in expecting what he's going to end up doing.
Here's the one thing, and we'll close on this. There's so many other things I would have loved to have talked to you about, but there's so much news just in those two schools, and I haven't even gotten to state. We'll have to save that for another visit. The thing about what Proctor provides, just like Jeremy Roach would, not quite as much, of course, some experience, and I think we're learning that if you don't have experience, it's hard to have success in the NCAA tournament. So at what point does Duke decide to emphasize experience over whatever the potential may be?
Well, I think John Shire has already been doing that. Like when he came in, the first thing he said was he was going to value continuity. And I remember like it made such headlines. We did a story about it in January of his first season. And he said, listen, we're still going to chase elite talent, but I am prioritizing continuity because I understand that that is what wins now. You know how many five-star players there were in the Final Four this year? There was one. One five-star. And he was essentially the fourth or fifth option for UConn. Didn't necessarily need
right.
to play like a conventional five-star because he was so insulated with the other talent they had. I'm not saying it is impossible to win with a primarily young roster. Like, you know, Virginia won a couple of years ago with some juniors. But you have to have that depth. And so, like, again, you know, we're talking about it. Jeremy Roach, to me, he's the guy who is like the perfect fit for Duke next year. He provides experience. He provides level-headedness. He provides some level of on-ball defense. He provides shooting. And he's a guy who has been there and has done that. Like at this point, if you do, you know, like John Calipari is going to go to Arkansas and he's going to, you know, try and do whatever he's going to do down there. Going to try and bring seven more freshmen and just, you know, run back these first round tournament loss teams. Like go for it, man. Dan Hurley's not losing sleep about that.
Right.
Matt Painter's not losing sleep about that. And I think John Shire understands that. And, you know, like Mark Mitchell was a great example. That was a guy who he wanted to keep around for multiple years, got 2 years out of him when he recruited him out of high school. That's a success. But you have to have those guys and you have to have them insulated around those superstar freshmen. Like Cooper Flagg and Malwalk on their own make Duke a Sweet 16 team at minimum. They're going to probably be the preseason number one.
Yeah.
But when it gets into the grit, when it gets into the grind of March, you are going to need some of the guys who have been there before. And that's why, like you said, you know, Jeremy Roach to me is the guy who is probably the most important priority in terms of providing that, providing shooting, and just providing clarity down the roster.
They need more guys like Brendan Marks from The Athletic at Brendan R. Marks on Twitter. Thank you, my man. Get some more rest, and we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. I'm going to go right back to sleep now.
We woke him up for this. He's just getting ready for the Masters. Thank you, man.